right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It's Tuesday. Two for Tuesday. Get your requests in. We'll play them later. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. All right. Every month, we talk with Tom Appel. He's a publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. He can answer any and all of your automotive or car-related questions, so text them or call them in it right now at 312-981-7200. You can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. And let's say hello to Tom. Tom, welcome back to the show.
Well, thanks for having me again.
Absolutely. How you been?
Really good. Thank you.
Good, good, good. Tell everybody about, as we always do, Consumer Guide Automotive.
Yeah, we've been around way back since 1967, but we review all things automotive, new and used, at consumerguide.com. We try to have some fun with what's going on in the car world. That's our blog. That's the CG Daily Drive blog. You can go directly there or just go through consumerguide.com. You can get there either way.
There you go. And Tom joins us. He's kind enough to join us once a month. We have a lot of fun conversations and news conversations about cars. And then if anybody has any questions or you're looking to get a car or need some answers about car or automotive stuff, it's 312-981-7200. I always ask you, Tom, what have you been driving lately?
Oh, wow. You know what I just drove is a car that I practically forgot existed. It is the Jaguar XE, which is Jaguar's compact sedan. It's sort of a competitor for the BMW 3 Series, but it's been a fairly slow seller, and that's kind of a bummer because it's a nice little car. A little bit too small for me, but reasonably priced in that field of cars against the 3 Series BMW, the like the Volvo, sort of the S60, but the compact sports sedan field. I liked it a lot. I thought it rode and handled really well. The interior was nicely outfitted. It felt like a luxury car, but it's just a little bit anonymous, and I think Jaguar styling might be just a little too dull these days to get noticed.
Oh, okay. And what else have you driven since the last time we talked?
I'm currently driving the all-new Subaru Legacy. That's Subaru's midsize sedan, in a segment that no one talks about anymore. This is a pretty nice car. People probably know that all Subarus are all-wheel drive. That's kind of their trademark thing. But this is a roomy car. It rides well. It feels good. So far, I like it a lot. It has a new infotainment system with a much bigger screen that's easier to use as a touchscreen. Big improvement over previous Subarus.
Mm, okay, great. What else have other guys been driving around in the office?
Right now, our guy Damon is in the S60 plug-in hybrid.
Oh.
I don't know what it is with luxury automakers, but all hybrids are now plug-in hybrids.
Wow.
And we're doing that. And it's an interesting thing because you get 15, 20, or 30 miles of EV range, and then the gasoline engine kicks in, and it just sort of works like a hybrid. I hope people are plugging these cars in because they're much better if you do, but they do work as hybrids otherwise. But so far, so good. I think he's getting great mileage with that because he lives pretty close to the office, so he's not really using a lot of gas.
Okay. And so what happens when the hybrid part kicks in? Is there like a sudden jolt in the car?
Actually, it depends on the car, and Volvo engines are not the smoothest in the world, so yeah, there probably is a noticeable jolt, and it's not as quiet as it had been operating on pure electric power.
Yeah. Wow, that's interesting. Do you like driving the electric cars?
I love electric cars. I love pure electric cars. They're very quick. I just drove the Nissan Leaf Plus, which is a long-range version of the Nissan Leaf. And because it has a bigger battery, it's just a little bit quicker. And it's a zippy car. And they're deceptively quiet because there's no engine noise whatsoever, which is interesting because you have this sort of eerie atmosphere, but you can hear the road because the engine, when it runs, sort of has a sound-canceling effect. So you hear different things when you drive an electric car.
That's weird.
It is kind of weird, yeah. It's hard to think that when a gasoline engine is running, it muffles out other sounds, but it really does.
Yeah, wow, that must be a little strange.
It's a little bit eerie, yeah. You hear gravel, you hear tire noise you don't usually hear.
Yeah.
But in general, they're quieter.
Okay, all right. If you guys have any questions or concerns here, automotive or car-related, text or call us at 312-981-7200. Tom, we have a call here from our friend Trucker Rich. Hey, Rich.
Hey, good evening, Nick and Mr. Appel. Hey, a general question. I'm 63 years old, kind of wasn't driving totally in the muscle car era, but listening to you guys talk, I've gone back and looked on the Consumer Guide website at old car ads, And I've noticed that car manufacturers never advertised horsepower as real horsepower. You know, you'd get like a 427 Chevy that'd say 290 horsepower. And now you got, well, the big three, Ford, Chevy, and Chrysler, bragging about 900, 700, 800 horsepower cars. What's the difference between then and now?
Well, one of the things that happened is that the horsepower, the development of the engine was completely stunted by the onset of emission controls. So we had the malaise era, which was sort of from the mid-70s to the mid-80s. And it was a period of time where manufacturers simply could not keep pace with emission controls, and power suffered and fuel economy suffered. But since then, really, as fuel injection has gotten better and better, and engine efficiency has gotten better, and engine durability has gotten better, horsepower numbers have just climbed to silly numbers. And yeah, you now have red-eye Hemi Hellcat things that get close to 900 horsepower.
Jeez.
And you have big diesel pickups that are cranking out 900 or 1,000 pound-feet of torque. But those are legitimate numbers. Those are actually slightly understated relative to the numbers from the muscle car era, because they used a different system in those days.
Wow.
Yeah, because, like, I remember one ad I've seen, I think I found it on Consumer Guide, it compared, like, the Torinos with 429 and 428, you know, Cobra jets, and it showed a two-barrel having more horsepower than the four-barrel 428, you know, and it's like, are they just trying to fool the insurance regulators? And if so, you know,
well, you know, what's... That's a very real thing. Beginning in 1973, manufacturers did try to fool the insurance regulators.
Wow.
So there were all sorts of different versions of engines that they were sort of sneaking in under the radar, slightly smaller. And like you said, there were two barrels instead of four barrels and stuff like that. And I think that they were sandbagging the horsepower numbers because it was getting more difficult to insure those cars.
Wow. Oh, that's right. Interesting. All right, Rich. Thanks.
All right.
Yep, take care.
Thank you, sir.
Yep. There you go. Oh, that's interesting. My dad used to have a Torino.
Yeah, I knew a lot of people at Torinos. For some reason, there were people running around Friend High School when I was a kid wearing Torino T-shirts. It was a popular car for some reason.
Yeah, no, my dad, we had a red Torino, and my dad used to gun that thing. So, let's see, we got a quick text here before we break for the news here, Tom. Recently, my 2011 Ford Fiesta was totaled in a crash. Oh. I loved the car, except for the transmission problems. Has Ford made improvements in later models?
No, and they've also discontinued the car.
So there you go.
Yeah, if you're looking for a used Fiesta, it's probably going to feel pretty much like the transmission problem you thought you had.
Okay, clear enough. All right,
yeah.
There you go. So, yeah, why is there? Have they ever pinpointed why there's a transmission problem in those cars?
Well, the problem was almost more consumer reaction to the transmission than the transmission itself. It was a double-clutch transmission, which is a very aggressive and sporty thing, and I think that if they were selling it to enthusiasts, there would be no complaints. But the Fiesta, and it was in the Focus as well, these were high-volume cars going to fairly mainstream buyers, all of whom I think were disappointed by the shift quality.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. All right, Tom, hang on, okay?
Will do.
Tom Appel is with us. He's great, and he is the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. You can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom, and he can answer any and all of your automotive questions if you have them at 312-981-7200. Talk and text. We'll get back to the conversation after the news. My little news coupe, you don't know what I got. Just a little news coupe with a flathead milk. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. I'm your overnight dude here every weekday morning from 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. Thank you all for listening and for the support. And check us out, 312-981-7200. So we're going to talk more about animals interrupting sporting events, because the hilarious moment last night during the Monday Night Football game of the black cat running around on the football field. We'll get to that. We're going to talk about really expensive movie memorabilia and everything, things that every Chicagoan should know. So that's all coming up on the show. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for Talk and Text, and it's 2 for Tuesday, so get your requests in now. One artist, two songs. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. Joining us now for our monthly visit is Tom Appel from Consumer Guide Automotive. here to talk cars and automotive-related stuff and answer your questions at 312-981-7200. Tom, welcome back.
Thank you.
Hey, you guys featured five of the worst-selling cars of 2019. What's going on there?
Yeah, this is these are not the absolute worst sellers, but they are bad sellers. And these were vehicles that kind of surprised me that they were selling poorly. And I think that their poor sales are sort of indicative of problems on the horizon for those manufacturers, or at least for those vehicles.
And what are the five?
Okay, we have the Buick Regal. We have the Fiat 500L, specifically the L, the Genesis G90. The Jaguar XF, all of those are just probably things you've heard of, and they're selling very poorly. And the Regal is really an interesting one, too, because Buick redesigned the Regal, and everyone knows that name. That was once a very popular model in the Buick lineup. But it's a midsize sedan, and sedans just don't sell well now, and Buick has moved on to crossovers. So Buick took the Regal, and they redesigned it, and it's not even really a sedan now. There's an Outback-like off-road-looking wagon called the Tourx, and then the thing that looks most like a sedan is actually a hatchback called a Sportback. But despite sort of nodding towards things crossover, Buick can't give these things away.
Wow.
It's a shame because it's actually a very nice car.
What are some of the other reasons why these cars aren't going? So why is the Fiat not selling?
Fiat's a big problem, I think, for FCA. That's Fiat Chrysler Automobiles. I think it was a mistake to bring in the Fiat brand to the U.S. just in general.
Uh-huh.
I think people who remember the Fiat brand from the last time it was here back in the 80s didn't have a very good feeling for it. They brought in a brand, and then they decided to sell it through independent franchises as opposed to through Fiat. Either through Chrysler or Dodge or Jeep dealers, which are all together now. So there are fewer dealers. It's a strange name, and people just didn't warm up to it.
Yeah. What about the Genesis?
The Genesis is interesting. It's a very nice car. Genesis is the luxury arm of Hyundai, and they've spun this car off. And the G90, large car, and the G80, more or less midsize car, were the first vehicles under the Genesis brand. And then there was just some confusion about how they were going to sell these, and there were some arguments between the Hyundai management and Hyundai dealers, all of whom wanted to sell these luxury cars, but Hyundai wanted separate franchises. So what they decided to do was sell some of the Genesis products through any dealers, but the G90 was exclusively available through Genesis dealers. And because it took them so long to roll out these dealers, the G90 was virtually unavailable in many markets. So it was just a very strange situation, and now I think it's kind of forgotten.
Oh, man. What about the Jaguar?
I don't know what's going on with the Jaguar. Jaguar's just having a hard time overall, but the XF, which is their midsize car, kind of competes with the BMW 5 Series and the Mercedes-Benz E-Class, is selling very poorly. I think Jaguar styling has gotten a little bit anonymous. I'm not sure this car's 100% competitive in terms of drivetrain offerings or technology or even safety equipment with some of the German brands, but it is languishing, and they're selling almost none of these things right now.
Oh, all right. A couple of texts here, Tom.
Yeah.
When our car company is going to cut out the smartphone middleman and attach a 4G antenna to their vehicles, as soon as my car gets its own dedicated podcast app, I'm going back to the flip phone.
I didn't understand that question at all. Because the 4G is available on some cars. Did I miss the question?
When our car, they're going to cut out the smartphone middleman and attach a 4G. Well, they already have, right?
Yeah, in some cases. I mean, General Motors OnStar has been around forever and is not dependent on a phone. So there is that. I think most people would prefer to go through their phone because that way they're not setting up separate accounts for a lot of the things that they're attached to.
Mm.
I don't think you're going to see a car go specifically cellular on its own, at least not for some telematic functions. In fact, it's been going the other direction.
Okay. Mark in Utah says, Tom, everyone knows that the 1988 Ford turbocharged Thunderbird was the hottest, sexiest car ever. and so were the men who drove them. Why did Ford dump the turbocharger? I'm assuming Mark drove one. That would be my guess, Tom.
Yeah, you know what? In the day, the Ford Turbo Coupe was the Thunderbird Turbo Coupe was in fact totally badass.
Yeah,
it was a very cool car. Little hood gills and the turbocharged 2.3. You could get it with a manual transmission. Really good looking wheels. The reason I passed on that because that engine was actually nasty as hell. It was loud. It vibrated. It made all sorts of noise, and it wasn't especially reliable. So Ford moved on to the next generation of the car to a supercharged V6 that was slightly less nasty. But ultimately, the Thunderbird proved to be a difficult thing to sell.
Yeah, okay.
I think that's
one of my favorite texts that we've ever had, I think. Here's Christina on WGN. Hi, Christina.
Oh, my feet are just killing me. Hi, Nick.
Hi.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I bought a 2014 Toyota Scion IQ a few years back, and I had a flat tire one winter, and with those cars, there was no spare. There was no spare. They have a little kit. You're probably familiar with it, where it's like a chemical, and it comes with a little compressor, and you put that into your tire like you're filling it up with air, and the chemical kind of seals it from the inside. So what I read in the manual is that once that happens, that it kind of sets off, or it kind of disengages the tire alert. What is it called? The little flashing thing that tells you that one of your tires needs air?
Yes, yeah, the TPMS, Tire Pressure Monitoring System.
Okay, so that's been going on for a couple of years now. I just didn't know if that was... I mean, I check my tire pressure almost every week. Everything's fine. But I was just wondering, do you know what that would cost to get it repaired, and do I need to go to a dealer to get it done? Because none of these oil Jiffy Lube guys, they didn't want to mess with it.
You may have to go to a dealer. The system in the Scion IQ would have been a fairly simple system, and I think the thing was nothing more than a little register that worked with the Adelec brake system, if I'm thinking about the correct thing. So it should not be all that complicated to replace.
It's not a fuse that I could access, like a little fuse?
Oh, I don't think it's as simple as a fuse.
Okay.
Okay, Christina.
Can I ask one other question?
Go ahead.
Okay. All right. So this is, I had my nephew in the car a few months back, and he was messing with the little, you know, the air conditioning, the vents, and he had stuck a pen that you write with, and he put it in there, and the thing fell down into the middle of the one of the vents, and I can't engage my defroster now, the little knob that you turn.
Oh.
Yeah, so I brought that into a mechanic, and he was, I don't know if he wasn't familiar with the car, but he said he needs to take the whole panel out.
Yeah, he might.
Oh, man.
$400 or $500 to fix that?
You may have to go deep in there to get it. Yeah, unfortunately, yeah, that's kind of a network in the dash, and it's, yeah, that's labor intensive.
Man, never have your nephew in the car ever again.
Oh, no, he's banned.
Oh, okay.
That's it for him. He wrote his own.
take the bus from now on, kid.
That's right. Hit the ride. No,
all right.
No more. No.
Christina,
thanks. Guys.
Okay,
thanks
take care.
So much.
That's a pain, man.
Yeah, you don't want to drop anything in there because it's really hard to work on that.
Oh, jeez. All right, here's another call. Ray is on the line. Hi, Ray.
Hello, Tom?
Yes. Yeah, go.
Yeah, I'm looking at a 2019 Ridgeline.
Uh-huh.
I'm 6 years old. I'll be using it for camping and traveling with my wife. Would that be a better pickup than the Ford Ranger? I'm looking for convenience and comfort when I drive.
Yes, the Honda Ridgeline is one of my favorite vehicles of all time, the current second generation of the Ridgeline. I love it. I would buy one myself. Everything about it is just really great. It's really a pickup version of the Honda Pilot with a wonderful huge trunk in the
bed
itself.
Yeah, I've seen that. It was beautiful, beautiful.
It's incredibly useful. I love that vehicle a lot. It's a little bit lighter duty than all the other medium mid-sized trucks, but if you're not going to haul a lot or tow a lot...
No.
It's my option.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
Sounds good,
great,
Ray.
Great vehicle.
All right. Thanks, Ray.
Okay, thank you.
All right, take care. All right. Tom, we got a text here, which is kind of tied into the baby Bronco story that's on Consumer Guide.
Yeah.
Any news on the new Bronco, when it comes out, and if the rumors are true that it will have a manual transmission? Also, what about the next generation Frontier release date? That's from
Luke. Wow, two great pickup truck questions, or truck heavy-duty, no, what's the word I'm looking for? Off-roady truck questions. The Bronco, which is a more or less 4x4 version of the Ranger. It's going to be an SUV in the truest sense of the word. It's a body-on-frame, off-road ready vehicle. It's been teased by Ford now for something like 3 years, but we will see it this year. It's going to debut in 2020 as a 2021. So that's coming out soon. As for a manual transmission, I don't know. I hadn't heard that. It's possible, I guess, because off-roaders like them. But I wouldn't be surprised if there wasn't going to be one. As for the Frontier, that is Nissan's compact midsize pickup truck, which hasn't been redesigned in something like 15 years. Mm. That is due for a redesign for the 2021 model year.
All right, there you go. Now, you guys wrote a piece about the baby Bronco, what's in a name. Tell me about that. The Bronco's been around for how many years?
Well, the Bronco disappeared for a long time, and it's coming back now after a long break for 2021, and it will again be a very serious off-road vehicle. It's sort of Ford's equivalent to the Toyota 4Runner, which is still selling very well for Toyota. The baby Bronco is sort of an inside name for a vehicle that has yet to be named, and that's going to be based on the Ford Escape. So it's going to be a smaller vehicle and maybe a little bit less committed to being a serious off-roader, but it's going to be more off-roady than the Escape. Anyway, there's some speculation now as to what that name might really be, because they're obviously not going to call it Baby Bronco.
Right.
So Ford has actually, Automotive News noticed this, but Ford's been to the Copyright Registration Office and registered a couple of interesting names, including Bronco Adventurer, Bronco Scout, Maverick.
Maverick?
Yeah. Yeah. Sport.
Can they name the car Maverick? I mean, isn't there, there was already a Maverick, right?
Well, there was a Maverick. It was a compact car back in the 70s. It was a Ford.
Yeah.
And it was sort of Ford's equivalent to the Nova.
Right.
Now, I love the name because I'm a James Garner fan. I love the name just because it's a crazy 70s car name.
Right, right.
But I don't think it's going to be Maverick. Also, the thing about Maverick is that the Escape is called Maverick in other markets.
Oh, I see.
So it would really muddy the water if two different vehicles were called Maverick. So what I think is going to happen, and it's kind of bumming me out, is they're going to go with Bronco Sport. Yeah. There's a convention now in the auto industry where there's a big vehicle and then a smaller vehicle that has the same name with the sport suffix.
Oh, okay.
Like Range Rover, Range Rover Sport, and Outlander Sport.
Right.
And I'm pretty sure that's what they're going to do here.
Okay. All right. Who names these cars, by the way?
I don't know.
All right, Tom, hang on, okay?
I will.
Yeah, Tom Appel is with us from Consumer Guide Automotive. Follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. You can also check out consumerguide.com. More car news and calls. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200.
Mustang Sally! Guess who better slow than Mustang?
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in now. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. There you go. Coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell. And the news is next, coming up from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. We're talking with Tom Appel, as we do every month, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. Follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. And we're talking cars. And if you have a question, it's 312-981-7200, talk and text. Welcome back, Tom.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's talk about this this confusion, the Canadian confusion here. What's going on there?
This was something I had to write as sort of a catharsis.
Uh-huh.
Because I stumbled across this once several years ago, and it confused the heck out of me. But apparently, the Canadian auto market has always been just a little bit strange to Americans. They've just always done things a little bit different.
Uh-huh.
There have been Pontiacs that were actually rebadged Chevys for different reasons, and it all just seemed a little bit confusing. But one of the things I stumbled across one day, just looking around online, was something called Passport. And Passport was a General Motors dealership chain that appeared only in Canada and only for 3 years. And it was this really really weird attempt to consolidate all these brands that General Motors had been buying in those days. And General Motors had been on a buying spree, having purchased both Isuzu and Saab and chunks of Daewoo. And in the United States, which is a bigger, more populous country, some of those brands could have their own dealerships. But that didn't work very well in Canada, where populations were spread out, and you needed to kind of consolidate dealers just for efficiency's sake. So out of this confusion came Passport, which was a dealership chain that sold only a Isuzu, Saab, and one Daewoo model. And it was only around for 3 years.
Oh, man.
And the crazy part of it was that the Daewoo model was actually badged as a Passport. So for 3 years, there was this one car that was a Passport something. I always forget that. Oh, it was the Passport Optima. Which was a terrible little car. It was a version of the Pontiac Le Mans that was on sale in the U.S. at the time.
Oh, man.
But it's incredibly rare, but not in any way valuable.
Oh, boy. The Passport dealerships.
The Passport dealerships. And then those were replaced when Saturn came online. So then those were just junked, and then the Passport Optima was disappeared. And what Canada got was the Saturn Isuzu Saab dealership chain.
Isuzu?
Yes.
What?
Yeah, it's all very strange.
Wow. All right. I don't know how Canadians buy cars now. I'm just very confused by the whole thing.
I don't either, and I don't know how they did it then.
Okay. All right. Well, that story's available at Consumer Guide Automotive. on the Facebook, of course, I follow you, and I follow Consumer Guide Automotive on the Facebooks.
Thank you.
And you guys just at least showed up on my news feed about an hour ago. You reposted a story that you wrote a couple of years ago called "What Was the Red Bull Car?"
Yeah.
Yeah, talk a little bit about that.
That was such a weird thing. The Red Bull car, and people have seen these driving around, no doubt.
Yes.
Was a limited production run of versions of the Mini. And it was the Mini Cooper that had been chopped down to just a two-passenger vehicle and basically converted into pickup trucks. So there was the front half and then a flat bed. And then over the bed on two little stands was the actual can at an angle raised up over the hood. That was the giant Red Bull can that drove around. But these cars are actually kind of rare. They were custom built for Red Bull by a company called Custom CRS, which is no longer in business. The bulk of these are 2006 to 2008 Minis. Though it seems like I've seen later generations of them running around, and I don't know who builds those. But kind of the cool part is the pickup bed part actually hides coolers where they keep chilled cans of Red Bull for distribution at festivals and whatnot.
You know, I'm looking at because you have a picture of one of them without the Red Bull stuff all over it in the can, and they're weird looking cars.
They are weird looking, and apparently they're sought after by strange people.
Is that right?
Yeah. I guess I kind of get it.
Yeah.
I guess a Mini pickup is kind of cool.
Yeah, it's a strange looking car.
It is very weird.
Wow. Okay. Well, you can check that out. You guys just reposted that up on Facebook. A couple of questions here, Tom.
All right.
Jesse says, "Hey, Tom, how is it that car companies are allowed to use extreme bright LED headlights on their vehicles? I'm concerned it could have a long-term effect on eyes."
We run into this question almost every time there's an advancement in headlights, and they always just seem extra bright. And I'm not really sure that they are brighter because there is federal caps on the lumen output of headlights. But when the halogen headlights first started showing up, and then when xenon gas headlights started showing up, and then now with the LEDs, it always seems like they're extra bright. But I think the difference is not that they're bright, but that it's a different wavelength, and they just stand out in traffic.
Yeah.
There's fewer of them, they look different, and they do seem glaring. But they're not actually brighter, because there is a regulation on the total light output. And in fact, I don't know if people have noticed this, but the LEDs will go off now. If your turn signal is on, the LED that's around that turn signal goes black so that you can see the turn signal.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a really interesting safety feature.
You know, the brightness of the lights is a concern of my father's. My father's 78, and you know, he still drives, and he drives great. But he's just, you know, the eyes are a little bit of an issue, you know, when you're driving at night, and some of these headlights are just so, like, if they're behind my dad and he looks in the rearview mirror, it drives him nuts, you know.
Yeah, I do know that effect, and I'm not getting any younger either, and yeah. I think that I'm starting to feel that same thing.
Yeah, it's just it's crazy, but especially if it's a truck and it's higher up than us, and it's, you know, and it's behind the car, that's always an issue. That's always been an issue.
Yeah, and that's a problem, too, if you're in a car, because everyone's driving crossovers and SUVs now, are higher.
Yeah.
So that is a condition that's very much a problem.
Yeah. Okay. 779 area code sends in a text that says, any difference between Jeep and Honda CR-V or Ford Escape?
Oh, yeah. Okay, so we're looking at compact crossovers. That would be the Jeep Cherokee, the Ford Escape, and the, the CR-V?
Yeah.
In that category, I would recommend driving them all. The Cherokee is interesting in that it's available with a 2-liter turbo, which is pretty punchy. The CR-V is just probably one of the best balanced cars. The Escape is brand new right now, and there's a new hybrid version that's pretty compelling. I have had very little experience with the new Escape. The base engine is now a 3-cylinder turbocharged engine, which should be very fuel efficient, but I would recommend driving them all, but paying special attention to the CR-V, which is a personal favorite.
Okay. All right. Real quickly, you guys wrote a first spin piece about the 2020 Ford Mustang Shelby GT500. How'd that go?
That's crazy. Yeah, our guy Rick Cotta on the road got to drive this over-the-top Shelby version of the Mustang. The GT350 is almost always the highest performance version of the Mustang, and it's back again now for 2020. This is now 760 horsepower from a supercharged 5.2-liter V8.
Jeez.
0 to 60 in something like 3 seconds. Just an incredibly fast car, and surprisingly affordable, given that it's ridiculously fast. It starts at about $73,000. There is a very expensive carbon fiber performance package that takes it to about $90,000.
Jeez.
You don't want that if you're going to drive it every day, because you're going to chip that carbon fiber and feel very bad about it.
Yeah. Wow, that's crazy.
It is crazy. It's an insane car. It's kind of a collector piece. If you can hit the track with it, that's a great time.
Yeah.
But I don't know about it as a commuter vehicle.
Hey, by the way, before we let you out of here, have you seen the trailer for Ford versus Ferrari?
I have, and this puts me in a weird spot because I now must see this because I don't know that much about that history.
Oh, okay.
But it looks fantastic.
It does look good, doesn't it?
It looks fantastic, and the story of the 66 24 Hours of Le Mans is awesome. And it looks like this is going to be pretty historically accurate, which is exciting.
That's great. Yeah, I'm excited to see it. The guy who directed it directed Logan, which is like one of my favorite movies of the past couple of years.
And Carroll Shelby, whom this movie features heavily, was a crazy man.
Yeah.
Like, legitimately nuts. So okay. that's fun.
Okay, very cool. Christian Bale and Matt Damon are the stars of this movie. It comes out right around Thanksgiving, so I'm looking forward to that. So we'll talk about it the next time we talk.
Yeah, I should see it by then, yeah.
Okay, cool. All right, have a great Thanksgiving.
Well, thank you. You too,
okay,
everybody.
Tom. All right, buddy, take care. Tom Appel, everybody, Consumer Guide Automotive. You can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. And you can subscribe to the newsletter, by the way. We forgot to plug that. It's free. Go to consumerguide.com, sign up for the newsletter, and you'll get all the updates and all the stuff that they're going to be covering car-wise on consumerguide.com. So get that newsletter, and we'll talk to Tom again next month.